I'm Dan, and I'm working from home in the South Loop, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you, Dan. You are a hard worker. I appreciate the introduction. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. This is show number 757. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. You can say hello online, Twitter at Outside the Loop, on Instagram, on Facebook. Check out the website, OutsideTheLoopRadio.com and WGNRadio.com. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast of the show. We would love for you to do that. We say good morning to Colin Seaman, who's the producer of the show. Hi, Colin.
Good morning, Mike.
It's been quite the week. And, boy, I feel like I've said that before. But here we go again. We had a lot to sort of process this week with the release of some body cam footage from the Chicago Police Department. And, you know, look, a lot's already been said about it. It's awful. It's disgusting. Just wanted to acknowledge it here at the top of the show because, look, on this program, we talk a lot about issues of equity and investing in certain communities in Chicago. And actually, we're going to be talking about that on a segment today. And I think it goes back to that, right? We want to see this stuff stop. And it's very complicated. It's a nuanced thing. But ultimately, we have to care. You know, we have to care about the communities of Chicago, not just the ones that we live in. But we have to sort of get beyond our bubbles, our communities, have some empathy. I think empathy is another theme that will pop up in the show today, and think about the rest of our greater community here. So, Colin, just wanted to say that at the top of the show here, acknowledge that, and I'm hoping for a change in the future, man. You know, and we're going to work towards it. So that's all I wanted to say about that.
I'm with you.
Hey, 5 hours of the radio today.
Yeah, I brought my peanut butter banana sandwich and my my coffee, extra coffee, and I think like I got a Cliff Bar in there or something.
you've got just like a jug of coffee that you are going to pound throughout the morning, filling in for Lou Manfredini, Mr. Fix-It, House Smarts Radio. That's me, and Colin will be producing until 10 o'clock today, so.
Yes, doing something I don't generally do, which is answer phones. So I haven't been talking much, Mike. I've been saving my voice because it's just as important today.
That's right. So call Colin. Be nice to him. Colin will be very nice to you. And because he'll be all amped up on caffeine. Hey, man. Great. Thanks for calling. How are you? Let's strike up a little convo. I'll say, Colin, we need to talk to that person on the air, please.
Right. I'm just curious, and I may just ask you randomly throughout the course of the Lou Show, what can and can't be power washed? That's what I'm looking to get out of today's program.
We've got experts coming in. Don't you worry. It's going to be a great show. And this show, Outside the Loop, is going to be a fantastic show. We are talking about issues of vaccine equity. We want everyone to get the vaccine. Everyone should get the vaccine. You know, it's a good thing. And the rollout was a little clunky, of course, early on. And boy, there's been issues about the distribution of the vaccine. And so we'll talk about that as it pertains to certain neighborhoods in Chicago. Also, hey, it's the recycling saga of Chicago. We're going to check in about our recycling program here in the city. What's up with it? Because there have been some recent developments. And we will learn about a statue in downtown Chicago, at the corner of Wacker and Wabash, the Three Patriots statue and its historical significance. Stay tuned. Colin, I'm feeling good about the show today. How do you feel?
I feel good, but remember, we're not sprinting today, Mike. Running a marathon, okay? Take it step by step, my friend.
Slow and steady wins that race, brother. If you are downtown and you find yourself at the corner of Wacker and Wabash, just to the left of the Wabash Bridge, you'll notice a statue of three men. I gotta say, I've seen the statue many times walking downtown. Admittedly, I've never stopped to check it out, but as it turns out, it's a pretty important historical statue. It's called the Three Patriots statue. And with us today to talk all about its relevance is Dr. Rochelle Gold. She is the co-president of the Chicago Jewish Historical Society. They're online at chicagojewishhistory.org. Dr. Gold, welcome to Outside the Loop.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And so this statue, let's talk about it first here. The Three Patriots statue, it was dedicated on December 15th, 1941, it's an official Chicago landmark. First of all, who are the three patriots that the statue depicts?
The three patriots are George Washington, who stands in the center. On either side of him, on his right side, is Robert Morris, and on his left side is Chaim Salomon.
And we probably know a lot about George Washington, but the other two, I know Robert Morris, one of the original senators, signed, I believe, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Articles of Confederation.
That's right.
A little history note there. But tell us about Mr. Salomon.
Mr. Salomon was born in Poland and came to the United States in approximately 1772. He had traveled in Europe some before he came to the U.S. and picked up several languages. And he in New York, he established himself in business, tried to establish himself, and he became an advocate of the revolutionary cause. And he was imprisoned by the British because of that, and was only freed because they discovered that his language abilities enabled them to interact better with the German troops who were working with them. He also helped encourage some of those German troops to defect to the revolutionary side. But by then, he also had established relationships with some of the other revolutionaries, and he was one of the financiers of the revolution. He helped France and the Netherlands issue notes that like loan bonds that were then bought by people in the United States to finance the operations, the military operations, and the operations of the new government, and the expenses and salaries of the members of the revolutionary government.
So a pretty important role there. And
yes,
he is one of the three depicted in this statue, again, at Wabash and Wacker. So the relevance of this Three Patriots statue today, why do we need to know about it?
We need to know about it because it is not just a depiction of a Jewish immigrant. It is an American statue that celebrates the role of different members of society that come from different creeds, religions, countries, different walks of life, and cooperate together for a greater purpose. This is the overriding meaning of the statue today, and this is, I think, what inspires many people who see it. The statue is a tribute to a Jewish American, mm-hmm, who many people aren't aware of the history of Jews in the early years of America and aren't aware that Jews had a role in the revolution, so that is certainly an important aspect of the meaning of the statue, but it does have this greater meaning. And the person whose idea it was Barnett Hodes. He was the corporation counsel of the city of Chicago from 1935 to 1946. And in 1936 is when he had the idea for the statue. He'd long been interested in history and notice the absence of anything in history books about the role of Jews in the revolution. He learned about Chaim Salomon, and he wanted to honor him. There were no public monuments to Jewish heroes in the city of Chicago, so this was the initial impetus. And he created a foundation called the Patriotic Foundation of Chicago, in which he engaged many other people in the city, both prominent and ordinary people. Mayor Edward Kelly at the time was the honorary co-chairman of this foundation. And the purpose of the foundation was to raise funds to erect a monument to Chaim Solomon, and then the other two figures were added as part of the conception. In the 1930s, the United States, the world, was in a transitional, precarious situation politically, economically, and there was a rise of anti-Semitism, not just in Germany, in parts of Europe, but also in the United States and even in Chicago. And this threatened not just the Jewish people, but the very foundations of democracy and other people.
And we want to mention that this Tuesday, April 20th at 7 p.m., you are going to be part of a program that will provide a little bit more history and discussion about the Three Patriots statue. Everyone can go to ChicagoJewishHistory.org and register for this virtual meeting, and you're going to be part of that program.
Yes. Well, this is a program that our organization initiated. It is under the auspices of the Chicago Monuments Project, which is reviewing monuments throughout the city. And we were selected to present this program. We had submitted a proposal. It was approved. And we are going to tell you all about the meaning, the history, why the statue is important, why it must be protected, why it must be preserved. We feel very strongly about this, and we're grateful for the opportunity to be able to present this to the public.
Again, ChicagoJewishHistory.org. If you want to register for that presentation on Tuesday, April 20th at 7 p.m., I do want to mention this, Dr. Gold. You know, anti-Semitism is on the rise in the United States today. The Anti-Defamation League reported that from 2015 to 2019, anti-Semitic incidents jumped to a record high. And I think that when we understand that, we have to turn to our history, right? And the Jewish experience in Chicago and this country. And we also have to sort of, I think, have some empathy, right? And others have said this, empathy for what certain groups have gone through to really understand where we are at today, especially when we see statistics like this.
Yes, I agree with you. And groups that are more, seem to be more assimilated into our culture, more successful, and are not thought of as being victims of discrimination and bias, are still wary of this, still sensitive to this, and it's still going on, and the figures you cited show that. So I think we all have to be aware of this.
Well, I think, you know, look, the importance of history here, right? And especially history of all groups of people, I think at the root, this is what we really have to learn, celebrate, understand. And I think this is part of it, what you are doing at the Chicago Jewish Historical Society. Again, on April 20th, that's Tuesday, 7 p.m., go to ChicagoJewishHistory.org, register for the event about the Three Patriots statue. I always love talking about history on this show, and Dr. Rochelle Gold is the co-president of the Chicago Jewish Historical Society. Dr. Gold, thank you so much for talking to us today, and thanks for all of your hard work.
Thank you. We look forward to seeing you on Tuesday.
The COVID-19 vaccine is now widely available to us. However, some Chicago neighborhoods are not seeing vaccine equity. Matt Harvey is a general assignment reporter for thetribe.com. That's a website helping to reshape the narrative of Black Chicago through journalism, video, and creative writing. And he is here with us on Outside the Loop today to talk about this issue of vaccine availability. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
You are quite welcome. So you, in this piece, which again is up at thetribe.com, that's tribe with two I's, mm-hmm. You write about the Austin neighborhood. And, you know, it's interesting because from the people that you spoke with, there was some confusion about who was eligible to get the vaccine and where to get the vaccine. And this was more than once from the people that you spoke with.
Yeah, it was quite usual from, hey, even people that I spoke with from like state and city government when I tried to ask them about clarification work. So, yeah, when I was out there on the street talking to people in Austin, I went to out south in Bronzeville a couple of times, spoke to people. There's just the general like misunderstanding, and oftentimes it's like little tiny technical things. But the thing about these vaccination eligibility, like different requirements, the way they've been changing, is just that it's confusing and it's convoluted kind of. So people they hear something one week and then it changes the next week, and they don't really know that. So considering that I cover it or that I'm on the beat on this pretty regularly, I'm able to inform them about it. So that was like when I was talking to people, it was often the first time they were hearing any update about what the eligibility really was.
And I know that the city of Chicago has been trying to inform the public. And I think you're right. I think generally speaking, the regulations and the restrictions and the who gets what at what time is very confusing. But in these communities that you're covering specifically, the difficulty is even more so because, you know, it's not like everyone's plugged in online and not everyone has access to the internet or email. And so word of mouth is actually really key in these communities. And as you write in your piece, that's something that maybe Chicago might want to think about.
Yeah, it's something that was really important. It seemed like, you know, the city understood that when you look back at the way that COVID testing was brought to the city. You know, it was, you saw the signs on every billboard, on every corner, on bus stops. You saw like everything, anywhere you looked, you saw something to tell you to go find somewhere to get tested for COVID-19. And when it came to the vaccination, it was like everything is online now. Not like that. It was like they had never heard of a billboard or a flyer or anything. And there were people who were in the park. I went to Amundsen Park to speak to people in Austin. And there were people in the park who had no idea that the park they were in was a vaccination site. And I know that the city has good intentions with its equity efforts, but, you know, those free sites, one thing that we, you know, you don't hear about when they talk about the new ones that they open up is that these people still have to wait 2 hours, 3 hours to get vaccinated at a facility in Austin, a church in Austin. And I was waiting in line for like 3 hours, and I was waiting in line next to people who were elderly folks who had to wait in that same line with me. And you hear about the story of Loretto and how those folks are giving vaccines to people without having to make that way. And there are a lot more instances like that that aren't necessarily illegal or, you know, against the rules like how Loretto did it, but where people are able to get vaccines without having to go through that. So that's another big issue with the equity thing, is that it's not only is there the access to the vaccine, but what has to be done, what loops you have to go through to even get to the vaccine.
And speaking of Loretto Hospital, you mentioned it right there, you know, one of the vaccination sites in the Austin community. You could see it right from the Eisenhower. Obviously, yeah. We've heard about how that hospital has come under fire because of the distribution of vaccines to those who were ineligible and those who were connected to the higher ups at Loretto Hospital. The city announced right afterwards that they were shutting down the vaccine program there. And that means that for the immediate time, right back in March, folks in that Austin community, which was a high risk community, COVID had really hit that community hard. They were out a vaccine site, which you talk about equity. I mean, yeah, we're trying to, I guess, punish someone, the hospital, the distributor. But that also means that this community that desperately needs a vaccine is down a site to get that vaccine.
And down a major site, a major recognizable site, like Loretto Hospital is a staple in the Austin community to people. You know, despite what, you know, the terrible thing that the CEO did, it's to the people of Austin, Loretto is the most recognizable hospital. You know, and this is already a situation where a lot of people are unsure and untrustworthy about the vaccine they put in their bodies. A lot of people still have, Black folks in particular, because of such a history that we have with the medical field. and how people fear anything new being put into their bodies, being presented to them, especially in the case when the government is very specifically targeting it to communities of color. And it's helpful to have that kind of name recognition that Loretto carries. It's helpful to have that trust in the community that Loretto had. It was intentional of the city to have their first vaccination in the entire city happen at Loretto Hospital. And so not having that definitely saw a big decline in what people were able to do. There were people who had already gotten their first shot at Loretto and were out in the cold about how they should go about, you know, going to get their second one. I even called while reporting on the story, Rush Hospital, where it was said that that's where people should go to get their second shot if they'd gotten their shot at Loretto. And they didn't, like, they were like, well, I actually got to call Loretto about that. So I'm going back and forth, and this is, and I'm having difficulties with it. And I'm wanting to give up on this, and I'm getting paid to write about this.
Right, right.
Let alone somebody who's doing this just because they feel like they're supposed to be doing some civic duty to get themselves vaccinated. And then once they hit all these roadblocks and people who are 60, 70 years old who aren't necessarily familiar with the functions of ZocDoc, it can be frustrating.
Yeah. And, you know, you say, and I agree with you, it can be frustrating. You say that maybe the city of Chicago in these neighborhoods like Austin should focus on communicating offline. So you mentioned billboards before, but I know that some folks that you talk to in your piece that's up at thetribe.com say, why not create a bunch of flyers and just have people pass out flyers? Because, again, that word of mouth is going to be helpful and really effective in a community like Austin.
One of the women I spoke to is a teacher, and she was saying that there haven't been like anything at the schools that they've gotten to give out to kids or send home with children. Like, that would be the perfect opportunity. Something that happens with most announcements that happen at school. You get a piece of paper sent home. Why wouldn't they just throw that into, you know, print a few copies of those out and have them ready to send home with the kids? Like, little simple things like that seem to be overlooked, or I don't know if maybe they were considered and done away with, which I wouldn't necessarily understand why. They're the type of things that are really direct. They are really reliable in getting information out there. Like, I feel like I, as a child, bringing those papers home from school was the first time that my mother would hear about whatever was going on at the school. That's how she stayed in the loop a lot of times. So little simple things like that, I think I know there's a concern about like having people, too many people out doing things, out interacting with folks, because we are, after all, in the middle of a pandemic. But I do think that there are ways to go about it once you have schools open, once you have these businesses in the community open, these churches open, all these places where, you know, people are already going back to be in person.
Yeah.
You might as well have people sharing that information in person at those sites.
I think it's an interesting idea, really, and one that's pretty straightforward. You know, have people in the community get in the community to interact.
Rocket science.
Right. Yeah. And yes, we're in a pandemic, but to the extent that we can, to have people in the community say, here's where you go, here's how it works, that hand-holding is really almost what's needed in these communities.
It is. It's definitely, and it's like, it's pretty simple when you ask somebody like what they think their 70-something-year-old grandparent is going to do, and that you just send them a link to a website. They're probably going to have questions about, okay, like, once I go through this, what's next? Or, you know, with Rush Hospital, you got to create an account through their my chart to even, you know, sign up for a vaccination appointment. Added factor, once you do it, there's not even a guarantee that you're going to get an appointment scheduled at the end of going through that process. And you don't find that out to the end of it, that something's changed where now there are no more appointments left. It happens that quick, honestly, that you could start the process and by the end of it, still not be able to get vaccinated.
Vaccine equity is incredibly important, and this is a really good read up at thetribe.com by Matt Harvey. He is a general assignment reporter for thetribe.com. That's Tribe with two I's, a website helping to reshape the narrative of Black Chicago through journalism, video, and creative writing. Matt, thanks so much for reporting on this story, and best of luck going forward.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
The recycling soap opera in Chicago continues. Recently, the city's largest recycling contractor, Waste Management, Inc., was given the boot, and it lost its bid to keep the Chicago recycling contract. So, what does this mean for the city's recycling going forward? Well, Madison Hopkins is an investigative reporter for the Better Government Association, and she's been writing about the city and this, as I call it, the recycling soap opera for a while now. You can check out what she's writing at bettergov.org. Madison, nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk with you. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. So, all right, a little bit of background here. You and I have talked about the issues of recycling on the radio before with the city of Chicago. So in 2018, the Better Government Association found some pretty significant problems with the city's recycling program. The recycling rate was below 10%, which is not great. And Waste Management was labeling the blue carts, the blue recycling carts, as contaminated more often than any other crew out there. So we've had some, for context here, some serious problems with recycling in the city.
Right, exactly. Going back several decades, a lot of people in Chicago don't have a whole lot of faith in their recycling program anymore.
I remember the blue bags. That was a whole thing. That didn't quite work out. So let's talk briefly here about, again, for some background, the significance of this. When we say that Waste Management, which again was the biggest in Chicago, when it was labeling blue carts as contaminated at a higher rate, what does that mean? Why is that significant?
Right. So why this was so surprising when we found it was that mainly that Waste Management, as you mentioned, was doing this practice at such a higher rate than the other participants in the city's recycling program. And just to be, you know, make sure everyone's understanding, to label a blue bin as contaminated means that the crews that are going by to pick up your recycling look inside and say that there's too much non-recyclable materials in there and they can't sort them out, basically. So they label the whole thing and say it all needs to go to the landfill. And this on and of itself isn't necessarily that big of a problem. It happens everywhere. People have a lot of problems knowing what to recycle, what they can't. But as you mentioned, what was so kind of shocking what we found is that when we looked at how three different participants of the city's blue cart program, which would be Waste Management, another company called Lakeshore Recycling, and then city crews picked up recycling from certain areas, Waste Management sent stuff to the dump at a rate 20 times higher than the other participants. So all this is to say, it means that Waste Management was often being paid twice for the same materials. Once to label them as the recycling as contaminated, and then once again to dump those materials in their landfill.
So they're kind of like getting paid twice almost.
Exactly. I mean, at the very least, we can point to this as they're the only company that was hired by the city to pick up recycling that had a financial incentive not to do so.
When we look at what happened here with the city of Chicago deciding to make a move, do we know exactly what prompted the city to make this decision? Was it because of, like you were talking about, the Waste Management Inc. being paid twice essentially with these contaminated rates of the blue carts? Do we know?
So the city has not come out and said, you know, because of this contamination issue, we are not going to go with Waste Management again. What they have said is that they put the contracts up to be bid out again, which was actually very overdue, and Waste Management didn't come in with the lowest rate. And they said that they picked this Lakeshore Recycling to cover the zones that Waste Management once handled because, as I mentioned, they were a lower price. But also they pointed out that Lakeshore has state-of-the-art sorting facilities that allow them to sort out contamination better. So there was a nod to it in that way. And then also with these new contracts, for across the board for all the new participants of the Blue Cart program, they have new rules in place about contamination practices, about how to decide when a bin should be contaminated, what the haulers need to do to document it and prove it, and there's financial penalties for missed pickups. And so that's all stuff we didn't see before in the earlier program. So that's improvements, hopefully, at least.
Yeah, so Lakeshore Recycling is the company that is going to now have this contract. And as you were talking about there, Madison, some things that are different in this contract, those financial penalties, it seems like there might be a little bit more of oversight, or maybe, I don't know if that's the right word, or if there's more of a check on the contractor.
I think that would be a fair characterization of it, yes. In addition to the reporting requirements they have to do, you know, now it says that every time they label a bin as contaminated, the hauler is supposed to take a picture of it, you know, upload it to a city service in some way, which is way before we had. Right after our investigation came out in 2018, the city also said that they were going to be putting more streets and sanitation inspectors out in the field to kind of check on these contamination issues, because we also get, the city gets a lot of complaints from citizens saying my recycling wasn't picked up, or it was labeled contaminated and it isn't. So the city has said they're also putting more resources towards investigating complaints like that.
Why do you think it's been such a soap opera? Why can't we seem to get recycling right here in Chicago?
You know, that is a great question. I've been wondering the same thing myself, but I think part of it is that we are in this kind of vicious cycle that the city has had such a long history of, you know, mess ups with recycling, of big scandals with it, of it not being handled well, that a lot of old timers in the city don't trust the program, don't trust that even if they're doing everything right, it's still going to be handled well, which, you know, in turn just doesn't make that recycling rate come up anymore. It doesn't put a whole lot of pressure on the city to improve things. I will say that I'm encouraged by this latest step. You know, we'll be keeping an eye on things, obviously, to see how it goes, but it does seem like we're trying to move in the right direction.
As you write, there is a comprehensive waste and recycling study that is due out in June. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So that is something that Mayor Lightfoot commissioned last year, beginning of 2020, and it's going to be partnered with the Delta Institute to produce it. That's doing a comprehensive study on our waste and recycling practices in the city, more than just the Blue Cart program, you know, talking about commercial buildings and larger buildings as well. And they've said that once this report comes out, they will use that to guide any sort of additional improvements they want to make to the Blue Cart program or otherwise. I'll be very curious to see what we get from that, because we've done a few things like this in the past and haven't really seen a whole lot of substantial reforms come out of them. So I'll be definitely curious to see what the effect is.
You mentioned it there, but we really haven't even talked about how, you know, if you live in a high-rise building, that's kind of like a different ball game versus if you live in a, you know, two or three-story sort of walk-up, or you live in an apartment building, a smaller apartment building, kind of a different set of rules over there.
Yeah, it really is. And unfortunately, kind of equally flawed, as we've looked at as part of our reporting on recycling over the past few years. Bigger buildings are not a part of the Blue Cart program, so this would be anything with 4 units or more. But it is the building owners are required to hire their own recycling haulers to service their buildings. But we found that it's just really not routinely enforced. The city doesn't issue fines for people who are not conforming to the law. Actually, the Inspector General released a report late last year about this, confirming a lot of the findings of our investigations and just saying that with the way things are now, we don't even really know how many of the millions of residents who live in big buildings don't have access to good recycling services.
You know, again, I think about why this can't be better, why we can't have more of forward sort of progress on this recycling issue. And I don't know if there's the political will. And honestly, I don't know. I mean, we talk a lot about the environment here in Chicago, and we want to say that we are pro-environment, and recycling is not the be-all, end-all. It's one thing that we can do to help the environment. But ultimately, do you think there needs to be more of a sort of an awareness by the citizens? Maybe we don't quite understand how this works. It's like out of sight, out of mind. Yeah, it's recycled.
Yeah, you know, I do think that across the board, not just in Chicago, you know, across the country, it's education about recycling needs to be drastically improved. And whenever I've talked to people in the industry about this, they've said that there's a lot of push lately to educate younger children in schools, almost to essentially just be like, put our hope in the next generation, because a lot of adults nowadays don't understand how to recycle and they're set in their ways. And, you know, if, for example, in Chicago, as you were mentioning, there was the blue bag program. We were all told to put our recyclables in blue bags, plastic bags, for a long time. But now if you put your plastic bag in recycling, the whole bin's labeled contaminated because a plastic bag isn't a part of it. So there needs to be a pretty comprehensive unlearning of bad recycling practices and us getting together and learning how to do it the right way, that it's going to actually be effective in these programs. And that's a big hill to climb.
Check out what Madison Hopkins is writing at the Better Government Association's website, bettergov.org. This is an important issue when we talk about recycling in Chicago. Hopefully one of these days we can get it right. That would be great. Madison Hopkins is an investigative reporter for the Better Government Association. Madison, always great talking to you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Yes, the wrap party for show number 757, where Colin and I do a little recap of the show, offer some takeaways, a little recappy-cappy-cappy, and recycling. One of these days we'll get it right. Not holding my breath, but that's the latest in the recycling soap opera, as I'm calling it. So progress, yeah. I'm happy, I guess, that we're looking more towards recycling.
Who is the we, Mike?
The city?
No, you said we are going to get it right. Who is the we?
Well, hopefully society at some point.
Yes. You know? I would add to your wonderful comment that you made about education and understanding what can and can't be recycled. I would add that it is oh so important for those producers and those brands, those companies that are making these wonderful products that we like, to think about their packaging and think about how recycling friendly it can be, and take some of the responsibility, frankly, for this effort. All right. It should not be, we should not have to, like, if I'm going to buy your product, I'm going to spend my money, I should not have to take more time to properly take, dispose of it. You should have figured that problem out for me, because that's time I lose. It's time I'm not going to get back. I'm not going to buy your product. Can I give you a really brief example?
Yeah.
You like Aldi.
Yeah, I like the Aldi. Yeah, let's go for it.
I love Aldi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Big fan. Love Aldi. And this is no knock against this particular, against Aldi or this particular brand, but Friendly Farms is a brand you find at Aldi, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have Greek yogurt. Love it. It's a regular, I think it's plastic, number two container that holds that Greek yogurt.
Yes.
So not only are you supposed to wash out and clean that thing, then it becomes, you know, recyclable, but there's actually this plastic wrap around it that's shrink wrap to it. It's very tight fitting. Do you know you have to cut that off for that plastic container to be recyclable? If you leave it on, it's not recyclable. That's unbelievable. Who is doing, who is, like, let's just walk down the decision tree there. Who decides to recycle their Greek yogurt container? Number one, that person's got to wash it out. So they got to make that decision. And then they got to cut off some like vacuum seal shrink wrap label. What percentage of the population is doing that? 0.5?
That's a great question. That's a great question. It's an extra step, and it seems like it's an unnecessary step.
Completely agree.
Yeah. So I think you're right. I mean, in addition to our society learning more about recycling, that's, like I said in the interview, right? Like, recycling's not the be-all, end-all. There are other components to this. And I think, to your point, is a conversation should be had with the manufacturers, the producers, these companies, about how they're producing their containers, or what those containers look like. And to your point, like, do we need the extra shrink wrap on the Greek yogurt? Probably not. So that has to be, I think, a conversation with those companies.
I mean, it says on the package, it says, like, it's recyclable if you do this, or it's not recyclable if you do that, but it's real small, and who's looking for it?
Yeah.
Nobody. Come on.
I know. I agree with you. Let's get it together, companies. Come on.
This wrap party brought to you by Aldi. Maybe. I love Aldi. I'm not, and I like the Friendly Farms, but come on, Friendly Farms, let's get a little bit more friendly, all right?
We're going to get so much hate mail from Aldi. The corporate
go Aldi. Aldi. Corporate? Aldi's in Batavia, Illinois. We love Aldi.
We love Aldi.
Aldi is Illinois forward.
That's right, Batavia forward. I did some segments in Batavia.
There's a brewery in Batavia.
Yeah,
got to get out to.
There is a Batavia brewery.
Right.
It's not called that though.
No,
but it's in Batavia.
It's the Aldi brewery. Maybe.
Do you have to pay like a quarter for the cup? Don't you have to pay a quarter for the
cart? For the cart? For sure. Yeah, you do. You have to pay a quarter for your bar stool, and you have to pay a quarter for your pint glass, for sure.
Aldi, same company of Trader Joe's, that own Trader Joe's, right?
Right, which all the, you know, for the persona and brand that Trader Joe's puts out there in terms of their, I don't know.
Like boutique sort of.
Well, I just think, when I think of Trader Joe's, I think like, oh, they are fronting that they are very conscious about the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We can't be.
What about the shrink wrap on your plastic?
We can't be.
What about
the shrink wrap? I can't have Aldi and T-Joe's as enemies of Outside the Loop.
They are not enemies. I like both of those institutions. I'm just saying they got work to do.
We're going to, I'm telling you.
Just like us.
Batavia is
what was the
rocking
ad?
Right
what
now.
What was the ad that ran back in the 80s with the crying Native American? From that moment on, like, the corporate world shifted the responsibility of recycling to the consumer.
Yeah.
No, it should be on the producer.
At least shared. Exactly. And I think more of a conversation about that responsibility needs to happen. You know what, Colin? Maybe we'll have that in an episode of Outside the Loop in the future.
This saga is the city strikes back. Empire, the city strikes back, whatever episode we're on of this recycling saga.
Oh, man.
I am excited, though, because I'm pretty sure Lakeshore Recycling Services, they take plastic number 6. Waste management didn't. I was in a waste management zone, and I'm really excited that now number 6 is online.
Colin's going to be out there.
There's a whole lot of plastic number 6.
The first Lakeshore Recycling pickup, he's going to be out there with a flag. Just waving it, he's going to be out there. Come on, guys!
In general, we should get away from plastic.
A great job!
Especially high-numbered plastics, but at least like Lakeside or Lakeshore or whatever, they take it.
Yeah, so does Lakeside. All right, we got to go. But hey, also, vaccine equity, important. I love talking to Matt. I think, you know, hey, Chicago, invest into some flyers. Know the neighborhoods. I know Chicago's doing a lot. I know they're trying. I know it's difficult. But Matt brings up some great points. And that statue, super cool statue. Really cool slice of history that we might not know. And we'll be back next week, Colin. I just want you to have a great week, and I want you to welcome the Lakeshore Recycling Service pickup guys when they come around. Maybe give them some donuts.
I'll have flags.
Flags and donuts.
Sure. And you, what's the equivalent of getting off your feet after running a lot? You just don't talk the rest of the day.
Right. I'm sure Jenny and the kids will allow me to do that. Like, you know what? Dad was on the radio for 5 hours. You know, he's just not going to talk.
So, do you know sign language?
I don't. I'll just text everybody, or I'll just draw pictures.
Just come up with 3 signs. One is beer. One is stop talking to me.
The other is the grill.
The other is grill. Yep. There you go.
Problem solved. Okay. Love you. This is the Rap Party for Outside the Loop Show number 757.
Rap Party.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop Show number 757 is all wrapped up just for you. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. Thanks to Colin for producing. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for being our engineer. I'll talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop on 720 WGN.